Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, read by Leah, Friday, January 20, 2023, Volume 94, Number 226. Hogan Park Project on the Next City Council Agenda, by Stuart Doreen. The Hogan Park saga could come to an end Tuesday. The Midland City Council will vote at a regular meeting that day on a development and lease agreement with the Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy for the design, construction, maintenance, and operation of certain improvements having to do with the park in Northeast Midland. The Midland City Council meeting is scheduled for 10 a.m. at Council Chamber inside City Hall. The agreement states that $10 million minus $5,884,848.42 that the city had already spent on improvements to the Bill Williams softball complex and has encumbered for design services for Hogan Park will be provided to the Conservancy for development costs. It also states that the city will provide an annual management fee equal to the lesser of $2 million or actual operating costs. The annual management fee can increase annually based on an index escalator not to exceed 1.035. The vote over the agreement is next step in the process that became the most talked about issue of the recent city council campaigns. The Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy, according to city records, has expressed interest in developing Hogan Park into a high-quality park with athletic fields and other amenities, such as playgrounds, a splash pad, a multi-purpose social lawn/pavilion, and covered basketball courts. The Conservancy's proposed development and lease agreements include the property will be maintained as a public park for the use and enjoyment of the residents and visitors of Midland. The initial term of the proposed agreement is 25 years, with two optional 20-year renewals. The Conservancy will be required to construct the features listed as main features, including baseball fields, dog parks, the tall city playground and splash pad, and the covered basketball courts. The city also states the Bill Williams softball complex is not included in the project scope. Additional amenities such as the trail system around the park, the multi-purpose fields and sand volleyball courts are also not included in the scope and can be added in the future at the expense of the Conservancy. The Conservancy will be responsible for hiring a contractor to complete the work. Once substantial completion of the project is reached, the Conservancy will operate, manage, maintain, and preserve the park for the term of the lease. The Conservancy will set the rules, fees, and reservation process, subject to the city's approval. The city will have the right to use the park for events for up to 20 dates. The agreement also states that the Conservancy will have the right to seek corporate sponsorships for the project and post-related signage, and it will develop an annual budget and provide year-end reports to the city. About the use of water, the Conservancy will have the right to use the existing water wells on the property, not to exceed 110% of current usage, and drill new water wells with the city's approval, according to the city. Per the proposed agreement, if the Conservancy desires to develop another project separate from Hogan Park, a park executive committee can be established with the city's approval that would retain all decision-making authority in respect to the operation and maintenance of Hogan Park, the city reported. Lastly, the Conservancy can terminate the agreement by July 31, 2023, if it cannot obtain commitments from donors and has until July 1 of 2024 to complete a capital campaign to raise the capital contribution of a minimum of $30 million according to the city. Construction of the project should commence no later than July 1, 2025. These proposed agreements will be effective January 25, 2023, the city reported. During the campaign, it was mentioned that the park project could be $55 million, including $10 million from the city. Want to raise chickens for eggs? There are rules, by Stuart Doreen. With the price of a dozen eggs increasing by more than 130%, some Midlanders may find alternative sources for acquiring eggs. For those living inside the city of Midland and wanting to raise their own chickens, there are rules. In fact, the city of Midland showed the Reporter-Telegram the following sections in the city code regarding the keeping of chickens in city limits. First, there is Rule 6-2-11, Standards Concerning the Keeping of Animals, Fowls, or Birds. It includes that no animals, fowls, or birds shall be kept in a pen or corral, terms not applying to general pasture areas of 20,000 square feet or more, within 50 feet of any residence, dining room, sleeping room, or other place of human habitation, or within 50 feet of any private water well. Rule 6-2-12, Area Limitations and Maintenance Requirements for the Keeping of Livestock and Poultry, also applies to the raising of chickens, provided the total number of same kept per premises does not exceed 4. In connection with all of the above described exceptions, the premises and facilities used for the keeping of animals and fowls authorized to be kept under any of the provisions of this section must be kept in such a manner as to prevent the emission of odor or noise offensive to persons of ordinary sensibilities in the neighborhood or the existence of any nuisance dangerous to the public health. Also, any premises and facilities used for the keeping of animals or fowls authorized to be kept under any provisions of this section must be approved for such purpose by the Midland City Council Health Department. The city also noted that the number limitation of 4 shall not apply to newborn offspring before they are weaned. For those in the county, there are no rules to raising and keeping chickens, Midland County officials said Thursday. A recent report in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram stated the average price for a dozen eggs has increased by 137.7% from $179 to $425 over the last year, and that the Texas Poultry Federation attributes the whopping price spike to inflation, supply chain issues, and the avian flu. The report also stated Texans bought $390 million in eggs between 2019 and 2021, per USDA data. That statewide price hike follows a nationwide trend, according to the Star-Telegram. Lastly, the Star-Telegram reported that a highly pathogenic strain of avian flu found in Texas in April has been rapidly killing commercial and backyard poultry, a massive contributor to the rising cost of eggs. More than 57 million birds have been affected, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Midland gas prices are trailing Odessa by 13 cents, AAA Texas, by Ben Schaefer. The difference in the average price for gasoline in Midland and Odessa is 13 cents, according to AAA Texas. The organization showed Midlanders are getting a gas price discount compared to its neighbor to the west, although drivers in both cities experienced an increase in the price of gas this week, and both cities are among the most expensive cities for gasoline that AAA surveys. After falling below $3 per gallon a week ago, Midland's price average increased 17 cents this week to $3.15. Midland's average per gallon a year ago was $3.17, according to AAA Texas. The price in Odessa jumped 23 cents, which was tied for the third largest weekly increase in the state, according to AAA Texas. The average in Odessa moved to $3.28, which was second to El Paso at $3.43. All 27 of the largest metro areas AAA Texas surveys saw price increases this week. The average across the state increased 14 cents. Pump prices have been on an upward swing as crude oil prices keep rising, said AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in a new release. Crude oil accounts for about 60% of the cost that goes into each gallon of gasoline. Other prices across the region included $2.94 in Lubbock, an increase of 11 cents, $2.95 in San Angelo, an increase of 6 cents, $3.01 in Amarillo, an increase of 14 cents, and $3.03 in Abilene, an increase of 7 cents. The average in El Paso increased by 34 cents this week. Permian Basin Chinese Association to host New Year Gala by Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Permian Basin Chinese Association will have its New Year Gala this Saturday. The event is scheduled to begin at 11:30 a.m. at Mid-Cities Church, 8700 State Highway 191, and finish around 3 p.m. Lunch will be provided with both authentic Chinese food and American food, then followed up with a performance show of traditional Chinese dance / Beijing opera. A news release said, officials expect between 250 and 300 people to attend this year. City paving at Garfield Street, Louisiana Avenue to start Monday by Mercedes Cordero. Midland drivers traveling near the Garfield Street and Louisiana Avenue intersection will be encouraged to find alternative routes on Monday. The City of Midland reported the intersection of Garfield Street and Louisiana Avenue will be closed beginning Monday. The project is expected to take approximately 6 weeks. Traffic will be detoured to Michigan Avenue, Golf Course Road, or Cuthbert Avenue, according to the city. The project's utility and intersection improvements will include replacing asphalt pavement with concrete pavement, adding a storm drain pipe to address issues with flooding, improving the corridor for pedestrian traffic. Local business access will be maintained at all times on either side of the closure. MPD seeks info on suspects in coin-operated machine burglaries by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Police Department is seeking information on a group of suspects that are involved in a series of coin-operated machine burglaries. The suspects have made away with thousands of dollars in coins and caused thousands more in damages to the machines, according to the MPD Facebook post. They have targeted at least 8 locations in Midland and another 4 in Odessa. The suspects are described as an adult Hispanic male and female and are at times accompanied by 2 younger males. The suspects are reportedly targeting apartment complexes and hotels and appear to be driving a newer model black Jeep Cherokee. Midland Crime Stoppers reported that on January 7, at about 5:30 p.m., the suspects entered the Sleep Inn and burglarized the coin-operated laundry machines inside the building. They stole approximately $200 to $600 in coins and caused approximately $12,000 in damage to the property, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. They were seen leaving in a black Jeep Cherokee. If a person has information about the case, contact Detective Standage at MPD at 432-685-7108. Midland Crime Stoppers is also offering a $1,000 cash reward if the tip leads to their arrest. Call the hotline, go to www.694tips.com or use the mobile app P3TIPS. No caller ID is used, and callers will remain anonymous.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 19th, 2023. Culture. What's up with Midland? By Morgan Taylor Thomas. At Eccentric Brewing Company, Singer-Songwriter Night, Saturday. At the Horseshoe Arena, West Texas Wedding Expo, January 29th. At La Hacienda Event Center, Los del Limit y los Bravos de Ojinaga, Friday. Laberinto, January 27th. At the Museum of the Southwest, Marfa Comes to Midland, Thursday. Downtown Farmers Market, Saturday. Seymour Fogel, January 24th. Simon Warank, January 24th. At Tall City Brewing Company, 3 beer releases in January. Chicken Parmigiana Pasta Night, Thursday. Pint Night, Friday. Live music with Rewolf, Saturday. Boss Babe Market, Sunday. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Chester Gregory Tribute to Jackie Wilson and Friends, January 24th. Aaron Lewis, January 27th. Fortune Themester, January 29th. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, January 20th through 22nd, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Prepare for warmer days. Looking to get out of the house but keep the activities relaxing? Head to the downtown DoubleTree for a pre-spring painting party, hosted by Maine's Canvas and Crafts. Participants will receive either an outlined 16 by 16 inch canvas or an outlined 4 foot by 12 inch by 1 inch wooden door leaner featuring a sloth accompanied by branches and greenery. Supplies will be provided as well as guided instructions. Food and drinks will be available for purchase outside of the $35 painting fee. RSVP by purchasing tickets at www.mainescanvasandcrafts.com. 7 to 9:30 p.m. Friday at the DoubleTree, 117 West Wall. Meet new friends. Keep up with your New Year's resolutions by joining Midland Run Crew for their first Rise and Run event of 2023. With meeting grounds at Centennial Park, the organization offers free workouts all week to any Midlander looking to start or advance their fitness journey. Don't want to run or nervous about falling behind? No worries. Rise and Run is open to walkers, joggers, sprinters, beginners, intermediates, and advanced athletes. For questions, email midlandruncrew@gmail.com. 8:15 a.m. Saturday at 200 West Wall. Shop, eat, and drink local. Find all things vanilla, warm and deliciously scented at the Boss Babes Winter Market, held at Tall City Brewing Company. Local female-owned businesses will set up shops around the brewery, showcasing some of the Midland's most creative and hardworking residents. Some shops include cupcakes, candles, blankets, beauty products, pet supplies, gifts for friends and family, and more. For more information, visit www.facebook.com/BossBabeMarketWTX. noon to 4 p.m. Sunday at Tall City Brewing, 3303 Golf Course. Marfa comes to Midland, back for first time since 2019, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. For the first time since 2019, Marfa Comes to Midland will be back at the Museum of the Southwest before heading to the celebratory fundraising event Thursday. Make sure you know the scoop on what's happening. Who? Marfa Comes to Midland stands as Marfa Public Radio's annual fundraiser. All proceeds raised throughout the night help Marfa Public Radio with technical and hardware updates to KXWT. Although Marfa Public Radio owns KXWT, bought from Odessa College in 2011 as KOCV, relaunched as KXWT in 2012, the radio station provides service to all Permian Basin listeners as the National Public Radio NPR affiliate. www.marfapublicradio.org. What? The spirit of West Texas floods the evening extravaganza through food, drinks, and music, bringing the best of Big Bend to the Tall City. For sustenance, catering will be provided by the Gage Hotel in Marathon. With an award-winning menu, guests can expect some of the most unique and delicious dishes, showcasing strong Lone Star roots and personality. The cocktails also pay homage by using Texas-made liquor and claiming creative names, Brush Fire, Texas Martini, Cosmic Cowgirl. To get an idea of what kind of barbecue and other treats will be available, visit www.gagehotel.com/dining/. David Branch, host of Honky Tonk Happy Hour on Marfa Public Radio, and Joe Nick Petoskey, host of Texas Music Hour of Power, will both hold DJ sets. The Grand Tourists, Marfa-born country and fold band, bring the live tunes. When and where? The entire event runs Thursday from 5:30 to 10 p.m. at 1705 West Missouri. Broken down, the schedule is as follows. 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., VIP cocktail hour. 6:30 to 8 p.m., sponsor dinner and silent auction. 8 to 10 p.m., party and dance. How? Two ticket options are available. The whole shebang ticket, $150, provides participants with access to the shindig starting at 5:30 and runs all night. The party and dance ticket, $50, only gives access to the final hangout starting at 8 p.m. until close at 10. Purchase tickets at https://bit.ly/3ZMCT3H. Why? Beyond having a good time, Marfa Public Radio Executive Director Elise Pepple told the Reporter Telegram, "Marfa to Midland is the biggest event Marfa Public Radio puts on each year. We are thrilled to bring this event back in 2023. For one night, we bring the best of West Texas to Midland, including dinner from the Gage Hotel, musicians from Marfa, and auction items that celebrate the spirit of the Big Bend. Marfa to Midland is an appreciation for our listeners and supporters in Midland and Odessa. You make this award-winning station possible."
Obituaries and death notices. Donald G. Hayden, Donald G. Hayden passed away on January 14, 2023, at the age of 96. He was born in Graham, Texas, on May 27, 1926, to Glenn and Mineola Hayden. He had one sister, Norma Hayden Hawk, who predeceased him on August 1, 2007. Don is survived by his sons, Tom and Paul, daughter-in-law, Terry, three grandchildren, Paula Hanby, Aaron, Michael Hayden, and Callie Carruthers, and four great-grandchildren, Kylie Hanby, Hayden Hanby, Clara Hanby, and Madeline Carruthers. Don was predeceased by his parents, Glenn and Mineola, sister Norma, and his beloved wife, Dot. We would like to thank Bernadette Ostroff, Rosetta Stanford, Olayinka Ejibiola, Heidi Gonia, and all of the Visiting Angels staff who worked as his caregivers. A private graveside service will be conducted at the Resthaven Memorial Park for his family. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. James W. Wilhoit. James W. Wilhoit passed away at home on January 12, 2023. He is survived by his faithful wife of 73 years, Betty, his daughter Ruth Ann, son and daughter-in-law Ron and Rosie, his granddaughter Micah. A memorial service will be held at St. Luke's Methodist Church, 11 a.m. Saturday, January 21st, 2023. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.nallypickleandwelsh.com. Juanita Jane Ellis Molloy. Juanita Jane Ellis Molloy, 88 years old, passed away on January 19, 2023, in Midland, Texas, from complications due to Parkinson's disease. Jane was born on September 1, 1934, in Dublin, Texas, to Earl Washington and Thelma Alston Ellis. Jane is preceded in death by her mother and father, Thelma and Earl Ellis, her brothers Earl Jr. and wives Helen and Jenny, Alston Ellis and wife Cass, her daughter-in-law Paula Jo Molloy, and sister-in-law Nancy Ellis and Judy Sanders. Jane is survived by her husband of 65 years, Johnny W. Molloy, sons Craig Molloy and his wife Bonnie and Gary Molloy and his wife Melissa, grandchildren Abby Evans, Brooke Claybrook, and her husband Zach, Cody Molloy and wife Emily, Kyle Molloy, and Landry Molloy, Matt Davis and wife Mandolin, Marissa Hammers and her husband Brandon, great-grandchildren Cooper, Cash, Crew, Dylan, Maverick, Mason, and Benjamin. The family would like to thank several institutions and individuals for the wonderful care Jane received during her final days. Thank you to the staff at Manor Park for their help and generosity. We will be forever grateful to Hospice of Midland for their attentive, loving care in her final hours. And thank you to the staff of Home Care Plus, and especially Eliza Gonzalez, for the outstanding care Jane received over the last 18 months. Eliza has been a godsend. Thank you. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, January 21st, 2023, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Sunday, January 22, 2023, at Crestview Baptist Church. Pallbearers will be Cody Molloy, Kyle Molloy, Cooper Evans, Cash Evans, Zach Claybrook, and Brandon Hammers. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. William A. Bill Rapp. William A. Bill Rapp was born September 10, 1927, in El Paso, Texas, to John and Carrie Rapp, and passed to his heavenly home on January 15, 2023, with his bride of 52 years at his side. Bill was preceded in death by his parents, John and Carrie Rapp, siblings John A. Rapp and Martha Franklin, and grandson Tommy Rasmussen, Jr. He is survived by his wife of 52 years, Brenda Rapp, four daughters, Samantha, Rick Pierce, Courtney Rapp, Tammy, Tommy Rasmussen, and Lanny Paul Ziemkowski. Six grandchildren, Ava Johnson, Taylor Rachel Welsh, Justin Wendy Welsh, Tasha Wells, DJ Boger, and Dustin Melissa Parks, and Christine Rasmussen, Lauren Moore, and 10 great-grandchildren, Caden, Autumn, London, Jaden, Haley, Layton, Macy, Maverick, Wyatt, Rhett, and Kyra. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made in Bill's memory to a military charity of your choice, such as Wounded Warrior Project, Hunt for Heroes, or Real Thanks. Visitation will be held at Ellis Funeral Home Thursday, 1:19, from 5 to 8 p.m. Funeral services at Ellis Funeral Home, 120-2023, at 2 p.m., 4616 North Big Spring Street.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, January 20th, 2023. City legal staff now down to two attorneys. In the hours before City Attorney Natasha Brooks was terminated by the Odessa City Council December 13th, the city had six attorneys. It now has two. In addition to losing Brooks, the city lost Assistant City Attorney Lori Means, who announced January 6th she had accepted employment elsewhere. Senior Assistant City Attorney Monique Wimberly resigned January 13th, citing the, quote, disintegration of work environment, political process became too intertwined with position, end quote. And another senior assistant city attorney, Jan Baker, said January 17th she was, quote, ready to retire, end quote. The city's legal department, which is budgeted for seven attorneys, was already short one attorney. They never filled the position of senior assistant city attorney Robert Carroll, who died at the age of 34 in January 2021. Interim city attorney Dan Jones and interim city manager Agapito Bernal did not provide answers to the following emailed questions. How will the loss of these attorneys impact the case flow at municipal court? How will the loss of these attorneys impact the workload at City Hall? Specifically, writing contracts, offering legal opinions to counsel, fulfilling open records requests, handling civil matters such as lawsuits? While going through the hiring process, does the city intend to hire outside counsel to assist Dan and Kevin McKethan? Have you determined an hourly rate for those attorneys, and what is that rate? Do you anticipate any difficulties in replacing these attorneys given the media coverage of the terminations of Natasha Brooks and Michael Marrero and the T2 contract? Also, what would you like to say about Monique Wimberly stating as the reason for her resignation, quote, disintegration of work environment, political process became too intertwined with position, end quote. In an email copied to Bernal, Jones wrote back, quote, thank you for your interest. These are great questions. Let me share with you that anytime a team member leaves or joins an organization that impacts the structural dynamics of the team, my role is to assess the team where they are, identify opportunities for efficiencies, and work with the team to implement new roles, norms, and responsibilities, end quote. According to city documents, assistant and senior assistant city attorneys prepare and prosecute municipal court cases, serve as legal advisors to city staff on civil issues, compose, review, and approve contracts, resolutions, ordinances, public communications, and other legal documents. In addition, they monitor changes in state and federal regulations, standards, and legislation regarding cities. Since December 13th, when both Brooks and former city manager Michael Marrero were terminated, 17 city employees have tendered their resignations or retirement papers, and a newly appointed assistant fire chief asked to be demoted to battalion chief. The city lost a handful of longtime employees to retirement since December 13th, including Odessa Fire Chief John Alvarez and Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy. Randy Pineda, who worked in the city's city manager's office as an assistant even before Marrero's time, turned in her resignation January 4th. Her resignation stated, quote, due to recent developments, I have sought employment elsewhere, end quote. Among the reasons cited by other city staff are their resignations: financial issues, a spouse's job change, low pay, another job offer, relocation, scheduling conflict, and personal reasons. Among the departments losing people: Odessa Fire, Parks and Recreation, Municipal Court, Odessa Police Department, and Public Works. The city was also hit hard by retirement and resignation announcements in the weeks leading up to the terminations of Brooks and Marrero. OFR Training Chief Martin Moya retired. Vanessa Ramirez, Deputy Director of Public Works, took a position with another organization. Director of Development Services Randy Brindley announced his retirement. Solid Waste Operations Manager Jose Jimenez retired. And Billy Talley, a Housing Construction Manager with Community Development, retired. Odessa City Council Member Steve Thompson predicted there would be a mass exodus of city employees following Brooks and Marrero's termination. So did a handful of city employees who spoke on condition of anonymity and said Mayor Javier Joven, Mark Mata, and Denise Swanner have created a, quote, toxic, end quote, work environment by micromanaging city staff. Joven and those city council members who voted to terminate Brooks and Marrero declined to specifically address why they were considering terminating, despite the fact they had just been evaluated in October. Since that time, Joven has said the city needed a change in day-to-day operations. He has declined to elaborate, citing pending litigation. Odessa attorney Gavin Norris has filed a lawsuit against the city because Joven did not allow citizens to address this council prior to the December 13th vote to fire the pair. Citizens were later allowed to comment at a special meeting held January 9th to refire them. Joven has also said Marrero has hired an attorney. On Saturday, during a Coffee with the Mayor event, Joven said city employees have not been responsive to constituents. He cited the time council member Swanner put together a committee of contractors and developers to discuss the permitting process. They met once, and city staff put up resistance to any changes, he said. In another instance, it took not days or weeks, but months for a company to get its new water meters inspected and approved, Joven said. Quote, things like that were happening on a constant basis, and developers and community members, vendors were getting nowhere with this department, that department, this department, that department, and they would just finally call me, and that's where I'm being accused of micromanaging. But the thing is, they were at their wits' end because their developments, their businesses, their constructions were being held up, and this cost them money, end quote, Joven said. Quote, every time there's a call, there has to be a call back. Every time there's a click on our website, information has to be gotten within three clicks. Somebody needs to call them back. That's where we're not customer friendly, and that's where we're going to get to, end quote. Joven, Swanner, and Mata did not respond to texts seeking comments for this story. Top of the class. ECISD racks up All-State Musician Honors. Ector County ISD had 11 All-State musicians selected this year to participate in the Texas Music Educators Association Convention in February. Executive Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said there were 7 students from the Permian High School Choir, 2 from the Odessa High School Choir, and 2 from the Permian Band. Hawley said they have had that many All-Staters in recent times, but, quote, any program that has 7 is really, really exceptional. And for the large school choir category for our area, that was the most, end quote. A more typical number, he said, is somewhere between 2 and 5. The convention in San Antonio is February 8th through 12th, and the concert is February 11th. OHS Head Choir Director Ginger Story said her students, Caitlin Fitzgerald and Justice Davis, are both 3-year All-Staters, which she said is a pretty phenomenal thing to have happen. Quote, that doesn't happen very often, so we're really excited about that for them, end quote, Story said. She added that they have both worked very hard. Quote, they both work a lot on their own, as well as with us and their voice teachers. And also, they are very gifted and very smart. They do a lot of musical things, and they always work to make sure that they are ready for the auditions, end quote, Story said. Permian Director of Choirs Lori Wash said hard work and diligence made the difference for her students. They started practicing in the summer. Story said there are only about 600 students out of over 14,000 that make it into the state choir. Quote, it just takes hard work and diligence, and the All-Staters that I have had in the past, that's what it is always, end quote, Wash said. Quote, they have to want it, end quote, Story said. 18-year-old senior Mason Simmons made All-State for the first time this year. He is a member of Cantori at PHS. Quote, it's pretty like rewarding since I've done this process since my freshman year and finally being able to go through all the way and being able to achieve my goal. It's very rewarding, end quote, Simmons said. He added that being able to achieve the recognition with several of his friends feels great. At the same time, the selection is sad in a way because he won't get the chance to audition with his friends anymore. Simmons plans to attend Baylor University to study finance. Senior Kendra Burton, 18, has been in Kentori since her sophomore year. This is also her first time making Allstate. Quote, it's just a reward in itself. Just working hard for 4 years in this competition, it's been a dream of mine forever. And so to finally see my hard work pay off is really awesome and cool, end quote, Burton said. Making Allstate her senior year, she said, is actually a positive. Quote, almost because it's my senior year, it means so much more to me just to be finally receiving this award and ending my high school career with a bang, end quote, Burton said. She has not decided where she will attend college. Her top three are Baylor, Texas Christian University, and Texas Tech University. Quote, I have been in the process of auditioning for the schools of music, so I will hear about that in March, end quote, Burton said. Caitlin Fitzgerald, an 18-year-old OHS senior, has been in the Corral for 3 years. This is her third year making Allstate. Quote, it's bittersweet because I'm very happy to have made it, but I'm sad. It's my last opportunity to experience it, end quote, Fitzgerald said. She said it feels different than the previous 2 years. Quote, I feel like I can just really enjoy this year. I don't have to, like, worry about next year or anything like that. I can just really, like, take my time and enjoy this, end quote, Fitzgerald said. The practice time you put in really makes a difference. Quote, all you can do is go in there and focus on yourself, and that's all you can do, end quote, Fitzgerald said. She added that she's thinking about going to Texas Tech, and she wants to major in psychology in college. Jazaya Parrish, a PHS senior, is in her first year at Permian. The furthest she'd gotten previously was area competition. She was surprised to get the Allstate recognition and was, quote, pretty excited, end quote, when she found out. What made the difference this year was her work ethic, she said. Quote, last year was my first year, so I really didn't know how hard I needed to practice. This year I made sure I was on top of it, like really know the music, and I feel like that really helped me out this year, end quote, Parrish said. Her goal was to make Allstate this year. Quote, that was my motivation. I feel like this is my last year. I had to make it. I didn't do choir for all these years to not make it, end quote, Parrish said. She added that she's really excited to go to the convention. Parrish doesn't know what college she will attend, but wants to become a music therapist. Sean Price, a 16-year-old junior French horn player in the Permian band, has made Allstate twice before. Quote, I'm just excited to go back to TMEA, end quote, he said. Asked what he enjoys about it, he said the freedom. Quote, you get to just do whatever you want, whenever you want. And also the groups, the ensembles, some of the best musicians in Texas. It's pretty crazy, end quote, Price said. Price comes from a line of Allstate musicians in his family. He said there was pressure his freshman year to make it, but after that it's been pressure he's put on himself. The advice he would give to other musicians who want to make Allstate is not to put pressure on themselves. Quote, just don't compare yourself to other people. Just work on trying to get better than you were the day before, end quote, Price said. Holly said the students have gone through a series of auditions. Quote, it's very rigorous. These students represent the top 20% of the state of Texas, and this is an individual competition. These students have worked on their own to achieve this with their teachers and their private lesson teachers, if they have them. It's very difficult. Multiple rounds of competitions, and the final round is everybody west of Abilene. It represents a large portion of Texas, end quote, Holly said. He added that it's a great honor to have this many students selected. Quote, it shows the strength of the programs. Each year is different. It's different students, and so we're just very proud of our ECISD students and all the extra time and effort that they put in, and we're appreciative of the teachers for all of the work and motivating the students to achieve this, end quote, Holly said. Comic Book Roadshow makes stop in Odessa. While there were no early editions Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, or Iron Man comics, Comic Book Roadshow co-owner Leroy Harper is still eager to find something of high value this weekend. This week, the Traveling Comic Book Roadshow made a stop in Odessa Thursday at the Courtyard Marriott. Harper and co-owner Peter Prisisny take their Comic Book Roadshow to Lubbock today and Saturday and Amarillo on Sunday and Monday. They travel all over the country giving comic book collectors appraisals on their items. Additionally, they'll also grade vintage toys and sports memorabilia cards. quote, Odessa is a city on our list of 200 that we've done in the last 10 years, end quote, Harper said. Quote, we're here to either offer free appraisals for people or give someone an offer if they have something to sell, end quote. While they didn't find anything that stood out, at least money-wise, Thursday morning, Harper said they've seen some interesting comics and cards. Quote, we've been doing more of giving people observations and actually buying, end quote, Harper said. Quote, it's hard to find something of significant value. We hope to find someone who will have something that we can offer a couple hundred to $1,000 for, end quote. At the show, they'll buy most comic books published between 1930 and 1979. They do purchase some newer comics, but they recommend people email them before bringing them in. The comics Harper is most interested in are superhero, sci-fi, horror, war, and some Western comics as well. Quote, we've had several Spider-Man ones, end quote, Harper said. Quote, a typical collection, we can spend anywhere from $50 to $500. That's really easy to do. There's been times where we've spent $5,000 to $10,000 for people's collections. That's what we're hoping to find. We're hoping to find a collection that someone is ready to get rid of, end quote. Harper has been buying and selling comics for over 40 years. He currently lives in Western Kentucky and travels all over the country seeking out rare and in-demand comic books. He says sometimes he'll find some really cool toys that are still in the package. Quote, Star Wars toys from the 1970s are very collectible, end quote, Harper said. Quote, a lot of it is the condition. That's a key factor, especially if you can find a Hot Wheels from the 1970s that's still in the regular package. Out of the package, it might cost $200. In the package, it might cost thousands of dollars. Anytime you have toys in their regular packaging, it ups the value. Comic books, they need to be before 1975, and then the superhero titles are the ones that sell the best. A lot of Archies and Richie Riches don't have value, but they are great reading materials, end quote. Michelle Henniger and her friend Darcy Champion were among the people who brought their vast collection of comic books that they have built over the years. Quote, there's a lot of Marvel, DC, Batman, the Joker, end quote, Henniger said. Quote, it's a wide collection. It's been through the decades that Darcy has been collecting them, end quote. Henniger has been collecting comics over the years, going to the different sales to purchase different comic books. Quote, I help add to the collection because I like to go to estate sales and find a buttload of comics, end quote, Henniger said. Quote, they're awesome and some are brand new. I said we might as well combine them to make the collections better, end quote. Her favorite comic book superhero will always be the web-slinging Peter Parker. Quote, I'd say my favorite one is Spider-Man because he's my favorite superhero, end quote, Henniger said. Quote, I like all versions of him, end quote. While Henniger and Champion didn't make a sale Thursday morning, they were happy to have Harper and Przyzny to look over their collection. Quote, we've had these comics for so long, and we've always wanted to get them graded and get an idea of how much they'd be worth, end quote, Henniger said. Quote, there's not too many places in Odessa to get them appraised, so it's awesome that these experts came down and helped us out, end quote. For more information about the Comic Book Roadshow, go to their website at tinyurl.com/5DWJ5MKS. Agreement reached in Jurassic Sprayground dispute. The city of Odessa has formally settled its longstanding fight with UTPB over the Junior League Jurassic Jungle Sprayground and entered into a new lease with the university. According to records obtained under the Texas Public Information Act, Interim City Manager Agapito Bernal and Interim City Attorney Dan Jones signed a settlement agreement with UTPB on December 21st and signed the new lease January 5th. In September 2021, the city and the University of Texas Permian Basin ended a 25-year lease agreement allowing city residents to use the sports complex at the university. Rather than removing the Jurassic Jungle spray ground, which was largely paid for by the Junior League of Odessa, the city opted to leave it on site. Back in July, then city manager Michael Marrero told the council university officials informed him they hoped to charge the city $78,000 a year for the use of the 7,000 square foot area. However, Marrero said the attorneys for the city and UTPB developed a joint settlement agreement that would allow city residents to continue to use the park at no cost to the city for 2 years because the council voted 6-1 on September 14, 2021, to give the university $280,936 for equipment, quote, fixtures for field access to sports teams, end quote, and for public usage. During that July city council meeting, the council directed city staff to explore exactly how much it would cost to relocate the sprayground and play area. In August, the council passed a resolution approving a 2-year lease settlement agreement, but it wasn't signed by city staff or UTPB officials until just recently. Minutes of the meeting state that once the lease is up in September 2023, the council will have to decide if the spray ground should be relocated. According to the settlement agreement, the parties disagreed as to who owned the equipment. The university contended the initial agreement stated the university would own it if the city didn't remove it by the end of the lease. The city contended they still owned the equipment. Quote, each party denies the allegations of the other party. But in an effort to reach a compromise and in order to avoid the expense of litigation, now enters into this settlement agreement to finally and conclusively resolve the dispute, end quote, the agreement reads. According to the settlement agreement, the city will own the main features of the splash pad if the city signed a new lease agreement with UTPB. The initial term of the lease is 24 months, but can be renewed twice for 24 months each time. The agreement also states the city will be credited $54,248 for the initial 2 years out of the $280,936 paid back in 2021. The newly signed agreement states the playground equipment, interconnecting bridges, pea gravel fall zone, exterior light and seating, picnic tables and barbecue pits are not included in the list of features owned by the city. The lease agreement itself, however, says the annual rent for the first term will be $43,200. However, if the lease is extended, the agreement states the rent will be no less than the fair market value of the leased property. The city will also be responsible for paying and reimbursing the university for all water and electrical utilities used by the leased property and keep and maintain the property, the agreement stated. The city also has to maintain commercial general liability insurance covering the property. Gray facing trial next week in Wisconsin. A Wisconsin judge Wednesday quashed the arrest warrant for Casey Gray, a former Texas House of Representatives candidate, who is facing a trial next week for allegedly violating restraining orders. Judge David Reddy of Walworth County Circuit Court issued the warrant for Gray, 40, when he failed to appear in court for a status conference in November. Gray later sent the judge an apology, saying he was, quote, serving in the Army in Ukraine, end quote. According to court documents, Gray was in court Wednesday for a pretrial conference, and he asked for a postponement of his January 23rd trial, stating he needs time to hire an attorney. Court records show Gray has been represented by three attorneys since the case was filed in April 2018, and all have withdrawn. The last one withdrew in June 2021. Court documents indicate Reddy said he would not make a decision until after the prosecutor conferred with the alleged victim in the case to see if they object to a postponement. The judge also asked Gray for an updated address and phone number. Court documents reflect Gray provided a Glendale, Wisconsin address. Gray lost against State Representative Brooks Landgraf in a highly contentious battle in March. He is facing one count of violate/harassment restraining order in a case filed in April 2018, and he's facing two counts in a case that was filed 1 month later. The charges are misdemeanors. After the warrant was issued in November, Gray emailed the judge. He said he had tried to call the court several times, but the calls had always gone to voicemail. He said he's left messages. Quote, due to Russian missile attacks on the infrastructure, I was unable to travel or have power to make a call to the court, end quote, Gray wrote in the email. Quote, I am attempting to make my way to the U.S. to appear, end quote, he wrote, adding he hopes to speak with the judge to, quote, dissolve, end quote, the warrant, so he can, quote, safely travel back and appear without threat of arrest, end quote. Wanted man arrested. A 29-year-old man wanted on several warrants was arrested following a traffic stop last week, but Texas Department of Public Safety troopers said he did not go easily. According to a DPS report and Ector County Jail report records, two troopers pulled over a Cadillac around 9:15 p.m. January 13th because two of its three brake lights weren't working. When they ran the name of the driver, Juan Carrillo Gonzalez, they discovered he was wanted on several warrants pertaining to drug and evading arrest cases. One of the troopers stated in his report that when he pulled at his handcuffs, Gonzalez pushed him, and when Gonzalez was taken to the ground, Gonzalez continued to push him away. The trooper also stated Gonzalez tried to grab his taser. Gonzalez was booked into the Ector County Jail on 5 warrants, plus suspicion of assault on a peace officer, resisting arrest, attempt to take a weapon from an officer, being an unlicensed driver, having defective brake lamps, and not having liability insurance. Bond was set at $85,500 in the new cases, but Gonzalez is also being held on an Immigration and Customs Enforcement detainer. Copper theft leads to arrest. A 45-year-old Odessa man was arrested on a theft charge early Sunday morning following a nearly 30-minute pursuit. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, someone from XTO Energy called 911 around 1:40 a.m. Sunday to report someone was in their yard on East Highway 158 in Goldsmith. When a deputy arrived, he tried to stop a Ford F-150 that was pulling out of the yard, but the driver ignored him and continued to drive east on the highway, its median and the shoulder, the report stated. The deputy discovered the license plate didn't come back to the truck and its vehicle identification number was from Maryland, the report stated. Joshua Lane Gesh was arrested 29 minutes later, and the deputy found copper in the truck, according to the report. When deputies went back to XTO, an employee showed them where the copper had been cut from some spools, the report stated. Gesh was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of theft of materials, evading arrest with a vehicle and two illegal dumping charges out of Midland County. He was released from the jail Wednesday after posting bonds totaling $35,000. The theft charge is a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison, and the evading charge is a third-degree felony punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.